Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and I'm here to help you become the very best version of yourself. What's up, guys? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. Today, I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Joe Tambo. Joe, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks for having me, brother.
Absolute pleasure, man. And for everybody listening, Joe is one of the co-founders of a Melbourne-based hype sneaker company called Athletican, which I'm sure a lot of you have already heard of before. And I'm looking forward to our chat today, Joe. I mean, you and I talk all the time, but it'd be good for the audience to hear a bit about how it all started and what goes on behind the scenes, and I guess what you guys are hoping for in the future with Athletican.
For sure. Yeah, thanks again for having me, DK. I'm sure, yeah, as you said, a lot of your followers have been across Athletican for the last 3 years. I think you were, you know, one of the first ambassadors / influencers we used. So
yeah, that was the other thing, because I want to keep the episode today a bit of a mix between everyone kind of understanding, like I said, like I guess a story behind Athletican, but then also I want to ask you a few things about actual e-commerce and how you guys go about business, and for those that are listening that are, you know, in the e-commerce world, that they can, you know, take some things away from today as well and start implementing it with their own physical products. Obviously, they're probably not doing sneakers, but I mean, yeah. I'm assuming a lot of it kind of correlates across all industries, really.
For sure. I'll take it back to the start, like you mentioned. Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, we're definitely our marketing model and our business model is all about hype. So I'd love to, you know, get the listeners across what it's like to run a hype marketing campaign, hype drops, and talk about our lean business model that we operate with. Yeah, so 100%. Basically...
Well, yeah, well, look, to start that off then, maybe, yeah, I'll get you to take it all the way back. You mentioned before about, you know, we were in touch before the first launch, and there's a pretty fucking funny story about that as well.
For sure.
About my brother. But I mean, yeah. So where did the idea originate from? What was the target market, like the audience, and how, like, what were those initial stages, and did you expect it to kind of turn into what it is now?
Yeah. Pretty crazy, man. Pretty just crazy story in general. So yeah, I was working, in marketing at the Grand Prix.
Yep.
Obviously working on two pretty world-class events, which was the Formula One and MotoGP. Mm-hmm. My business partner, Robbie, was the founder of Uncle Jack Watches, which I'm sure your listeners would be across as well. We were just having a coffee. We'd actually we met whilst doing internships while at uni on another brand called Concave. Anyway, we'd catch up regularly, and he just said, mate, I think there's a gap in the market for a sneaker label. There was not really a sneaker label in Australia, e-com focused, using influencers to push, you know, hype runs, athleisure being limited runs, athleisure being at the forefront, obviously such a booming trend, activewear. So yeah, we saw a gap in the market to create a limited release sneaker, you know, dropping limited runs, creating hype behind the limited runs. Obviously, with the angle being an Aussie brand, there wasn't anyone else in that space. Don't get me wrong, when we did pull a trigger and, you know, you get a container of 500 shoes rocking up to the warehouse at that stage, you know, we're like, fuck, where are these 500 shoes going? and you know, thankfully 3 years later, it's funny, you look back and you go, started with 500, we've now in 3 years moved over something like 20,000 pairs. So it's been an insane growth and rapid growth, and you know, very thankful that we're here now. But yeah, it was crazy at the start to where it is now, and just how we've built from day one to now. So basically at the start, 500 shoes roll up. Obviously we both had marketing backgrounds, but how do you move 500 shoes when no one knows about you? So it was
That's something that I think is quite interesting. And you know, obviously we had a chat the other day. Danielle and I are working on something together at the moment, and Yeah, the thing that I was kind of so intrigued in is like, yeah, you've got all this idea and you've got this product which you think is really great, but but currently no one has fucking any idea of who you are, what the product is, or they have no reason to buy it. So what, like, yeah, how did you guys go about that in terms of getting it in front of people and making sure that people know about the product and want to buy it?
Yeah, that's right. So as I touched on, Robbie comes from an econ background, marketing background, so did I. It was then about how do we get this out to the masses? And obviously, like any startup, you know, you want to keep money close to your chest. You've already invested in, you know, setting up the company and the business, like we've touched on. You've invested in stock. In our case, our minimum order was 500. So you've got 500 shoes come in. How do you move them? So we went for, and like I said to you the other day, we got our original waiting list from PR. So we had, you know, The Age, The Herald Sun, Boss Hunting, all those big editorials write about us before we'd even launched. So I sent out a press release to all the media outlets, just outlining who we were. So an Australian sneaker label, there was no one else in that space. Our first drops only got, 500 shoes. We'd already had an existing waiting list that we'd been building for about a year before, just via socials.
So 12 months in advance before the first launch?
It was probably not 12. It was sort of like 3 to 6 where we just started posting like pretty generic socials. There's an Australian sneaker label come in.
Okay, cool.
Sign up for access. So. Yeah. We sort of had a waiting list already of people. They didn't even know what the shoe looked like, but just intrigued as to what we were doing.
And then we
got the PR and we had all those huge media outlets write about us. And then we had thousands on the waiting list before we'd even released our first drop, which was insane.
Yeah.
And crazy that we'd automatically had people know about us before we'd released our first product. We use that with a mix of influencers. So reaching out to people such as yourself, and fitness influencers. And, we used a mix of sports people as well in Australia.
Yeah.
Obviously in that target market, obviously athleisure. So gym fitness was the key angle. So I think about 10% of our product went out to influencers to start. Obviously, with less money being spent on advertising, it was about getting that organic reach using influencers. We used that mix of influencers to really push out the product, as well as that PR that we got, which I cannot stress enough was so important in that first release, having the general public see from mass media who we were telling our story. And the story was we were that, you know, first Australian sneaker label with limited drops. So a mix of that and the first release sold out on the night.
Unreal.
Again, crazy. So, that was a huge win, monumental. And then obviously you're going from, you know, not selling one product to selling close to 500 in a night. You then have to use that momentum to build into the second and third and so on. So we got off to a really good start. And then that built momentum into the second release. More people knew about us. I think we got picked up from another editorial who wrote about us going to the second one.
Cool.
Other influencers post about it. We had people reach out. So it was that organic rise from there and a good marketing mix, which really held us in good stead for that first release.
For those that are going for the limited release drop, like you guys do, or like what in particular you were doing at the start, how important is the gap in between the first and second one? So like if you do a big launch and you sell out and there's a lot of hype, how long is too long to wait until the next one to the point where it kind of dies off a bit? And how long did you guys wait?
I think for our first one, we had our first release in June. And then our second release, from memory was in the September. So it was about a 3 month wait. And in that time we were able to, again, reach out to more influencers, have a bit more money to spend on ads, learn from our mistakes from the first release. and then just, you know, mold it all together and build hype leading into the second release.
And then obviously with Athletican, you guys kind of kept it to the one product and particularly like the one color initially, and then each launch was kind of launching a certain color. Do you reckon that's important for a new or any e-commerce business, but particularly a new e-commerce business, to try and put out one product and do that exceptionally well first, instead of trying to have like a full range of, say, for example, say if you had like four different styles of shoes, do you reckon that becomes a lot harder then once you're trying to promote a bunch of different shit?
Yeah, for sure. I think like we spoke about, you know, the beauty of our first campaign and basically every campaign we've done since, I think we're probably closing in on 50 different launches now. And every time, bar one, we've only released one shoe at a time. Much easier on your socials to have a story. So, for example, you know, we're releasing the Fluoro Blue Kicks, which are next to you on Monday.
So it'll be tonight for those who are listening. Tonight, when it comes out today, it'll be tonight, or it'll be fucking ages ago if you're listening to this way after.
That's right. So, so we've got basically a campaign sweet spot for us is anywhere from sort of 7 to 14 days. We find that anything longer than 14 days, it loses its like just
hype.
So you post that first image, you don't want to be posting 20 of the same image before it launches, because people have seen it too many times. It almost lose interest.
Yeah.
So we've found that over time, and what our analytics tell us is that sort of 7 to 14 day limit is a good one. So it's here's our brand new release. You'll also go out to your database via email or via socials. And then it's basically just driving signups. With the blue ones, you know, or our limited edition releases, we might be dropping 300. All of a sudden, you've got a waiting list of 1,000. So you're creating that hype. There's only, you know, 300 pairs available. You've got 1,000 on the waiting list. You're going to have to be quick. You hit them up via email, socials, SMS, influencers. It's so in your face that if they've got any interest in the product, they're getting hit up that many times. And you're really pushing that
That kind of correlates, I reckon, a lot, not even just with products too. Like I try and do the same with my content, such as this podcast and, you know, daily emails and Instagram, fucking try and get across in front of people that often, that when it comes to the time when they need to make a decision about what, you know, for you guys, they want a shoe, you have to be the first person they think of because they've seen your shit so many times.
Yeah. And I think like we said, and I sort of went on a bit of a different path there, but like we just said, if you're doing that with one product, it's so much easier to get in their face, especially with when you're releasing, you know, want to really sell through a lot of product in a quick amount of time, to just have the one product in their face over a 7 to 14 day period. Like we said before, if you're releasing 15 different products, let's say, yes, you might be releasing a collection, but it's a lot harder to have in that short amount of time all those products in your face at one time. So we've found it, you know, we sometimes do, or usually do, two releases a month. And that's a real sweet spot for us.
Two a month. So you were saying before about how you look at about 7 to 14 day hype for a launch or a release. So basically, if it's assuming like a 4 week month, so you're pretty much finishing one launch and then starting the next launch almost instantly. Oh, the next hype for the next launch instantly.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a pretty crazy, every month's pretty crazy because you're so full on in terms of hype campaigns into launch, getting ads set up, having your influencer list ready, who you're going to hit up, who you want to promote the product. There's a lot that goes into those marketing campaigns. We're mapped out now, 12 to 18 months in advance of what's getting released, because you have to constantly be ahead. Because otherwise you're doing things ad hoc, and being ad hoc can turn into mistakes, and like any,
you lose a lot of control.
That's right. And like any small biz, like, you know, and startup especially, you know, you're privy to making mistakes. So you just want to eliminate as many mistakes as possible.
Yeah. Now, this might not be something that you're willing to say on the podcast or whatever. So if it's not, then feel free to not answer. But, you know, in terms of costs of a launch, when you include the stock, include the paid advertising,
yeah,
hours that yourself and Robbie or whoever else is part of the staff that are working on the launch. Launch one compared to how much it's costing you to do a launch now for the same quantity of shoes. Like what type of price are we looking at? Because I think a lot of the time people would have no thought to that. I know I didn't until, you know, like I said, starting to go down the path now of launching something with e-commerce. And then you start to realize that there's just an absolute shitload of costs and the costs are probably a lot more than what you expected. So yeah, what does that look like from the first launch compared to what it would be now?
I think without putting an exact number on it, because they do vary.
Yeah.
I think it's about, like we spoke about that, getting that marketing mix right. The product cost is variable based on what you're ordering.
Yeah.
And like, for example, with our manufacturer now, because I've built a relationship and a rapport and, you know, we've worked with them for years now, you can get your minimum order quantities down. So instead of having to invest in so much stock, you get your minimum order down. And if you're running a product-based business or e-com biz, you know that's number one, your order quantities. In terms of advertising, if you're spending money on influencers or ambassadors, you want to make sure you're spending money on the right ones, because otherwise your return on ad spend is lower, which, you know, there's money lost there. Basically, it's wasted
money, yeah.
That's right. So there's all these things. And the biggest mistake you can make is not learning from a previous mistake. So, you know, if you've made a mistake and you've lost money, take that in, because it's a lesson, and learn from that for the next one, so you don't make that mistake again.
Yep.
So after every campaign, because we are such a campaign-based biz. Sorry, mate. It's ringing.
It's the media calling up.
Sure you don't, exactly. You don't make that mistake again.
Yeah, okay. Well, you mentioned mistakes just then. So is there any big, there's probably been a few, but is there any kind of like big mistakes or big, I'm not going to say failures, but kind of challenges that you guys have had since starting that you have been able to learn from, that probably in hindsight you wish you had have done something a little differently earlier on?
Yeah, for sure. I think, return on ad spend is a massive one. You should look back at every campaign or everything you've launched and go, okay, where have we spent money here? Where could have we saved money? Where could have we spent more money, which would have generated more sales? There's the stuff of at the start, you know, especially at the startup stage, which we spoke about just the other day, you go, oh, should I spend that more money here to have this registered or that protected? Or do I invest that a little bit more here or there? Which,
in terms of trademarks and stuff.
Trademarks and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it the other way.
We've had a bit of, you know, you might get some legal letters or something and you know, you scratch your head and, you know, you wish you did things at the start. So I think it's just, you learn as you go, but I must stress with us, it's just been a matter of learning from a mistake and just not making it again. Cause in any small biz, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to learn from it. And I think it's just a matter of, just not making that mistake again, cause it can shoot you in the foot.
Yeah. In terms of Athletican, have you guys had outside investors come in?
We've been all self-funded.
Yeah. And is that something for someone's, is that like when you guys first looked at it, was that a discussion? And is that like, what's your advice in that regard? Like depending, it probably depends on what type of business you're looking to launch, I guess, but
yeah.
Would you recommend trying to be basically self-funded for as long as possible? If that's an option or?
Yeah, if it's an option, I think, you know, for us, it wasn't even a question, because obviously if you're self-funded, you're self-made and things are a lot easier. And I think, you know, like we've spoken about, I think when you're starting or if you're looking to start a brand, like for us, collaborations have been such a massive massive winner, mm-hmm. and having like faces of the company. So I don't know. So like to the audience listening today, well, you know, we've had a lot of, we've done a lot of collaborations, e.g. like a Nike Jordan shoe. You know, our first collaboration was with Will Sparks, who obviously you train. Yeah. And obviously Will's like a legend and, you know, has so many followers, but we, like, yeah, when we did that shoe with Will and having a face to the brand that made sense. So like Will ticked all the boxes, Melbourne based, huge following, cult following. You can't underestimate that cult following. He's got diehard fans, you know, loves the gym. So for us and DJ, for us, you know, his audience is a similar demographic to us, loves the gym, we're athleisure, Melbourne based, we were Melbourne based. That collaboration like just made total sense.
Ticked all the boxes,
Ticked all the boxes. And having that collaboration and him bringing out his own Will Sparks, ex-athletic and sneaker, I think we had 2,500 signups for the first release. We only had 400 shoes. So you can imagine the hype behind that. We had Pedestrian write about it. Those shoes sold out in like 14 minutes, something crazy. And my point with that is I think the only, if you're looking for an investor or you're looking for someone to be the face of a company or you want to give, you know, some equity in your new business to someone, maybe it's having a face, because if you don't have a story and you have a face, they're the ones that can generate that PR and that automatic interest and following in your brand.
Yeah, right.
That would be...
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. With, in terms of like, obviously the difference in between, the difference between the business in terms of the, you know, you're following the customer base and, you know, even like quality of shoes and the amount you pump, the volume you're pumping out now from the start compared to now is obviously night and day. So do you guys have like, I guess, benchmarks or like kind of like a bit of a checklist that you check off to when you get to a point where you want to like increase things, whether that's, you know, bringing on staff, whether that's, you know, looking at, like, I don't know, like putting more money into the business, where you're trying to like level up, is there certain benchmarks that you meet? And then once you reach that, you kind of go, all right, what's our next step to kind of increase this and build it even bigger?
For sure. So, you know, we've got a, I think any small business, you know, should have a cash flow, and it's important to build that cash flow out 12 months, basically revenue minus expenses. You know, that's what a cash flow is, in cash at bank, because as soon as you've got a cash flow, you then know, oh cool, we've sold 500 shoes this month, but hey, we just spent, let's just call it, I don't know, 50 grand. So you're not actually making, there's no money being made. So having a cash flow and having your rev minus expenses, as simple as it sounds, you need that, and that needs to be projected out 12 months to know what your bottom line looks like, what your cash at bank looks like. For us, you know, we're, as I said, we're working, you know, you've obviously got strategic plans up to sort of 3 to 5 years where you want to be. You've also got your day-to-day and your monthly cash flow. How many, for us, how many shoes we need to sell a month, what's launching that month. When we're ordering stock, because stock's such an expensive, thing, you know, with us, like I think I mentioned to you, we've got, a 3PL now. Those that don't know, a 3PL is a third party logistics company which basically pick and pack our orders. So we're in our office on Lygon Street. We've got Robbie and I looking after marketing. We've got Matt, who you know as well, Matt Harrow, who's been on board basically since day one. He's our shoe designer and content creator. Absolute whiz. We got Ryan on board, who's our graphic designer, and I also work with a business coach weekly, David Torbin, best in the biz in Melbourne, I reckon, because I catch up with him weekly, and it's so good to have that outside voice who really helps with strategy and cash flow and really pushes you and holds yourself accountable. And I highly recommend, if you are in a startup or have your own business, having that outside voice that's not in the business, because they look at things through a different lens, and he's really helped me as well.
Awesome. What I was going to ask, and this kind of goes back a few steps, probably should have asked at the start, but fuck it, I'll ask it now. How important is it to know exactly who your audience is? I mean, obviously you would just fucking love for everybody to come and buy a pair of Athleticans and for everybody to want your shoes, but you can't market to everybody all the time. So how important do you think it is to be able to niche down and decide exactly who you want to target to? And then even if that means, because, you know, I think I reckon a lot of business owners would probably feel the same way. Like I definitely did when I was trying to niche down to decide exactly who I want my content to be for, because you go, oh, I want, you know, like I was thinking, I want my content to relate a lot to this kind of group of people. But then I almost also have a thought going like, but I know I can still help these people as well in some way or another, but I'm kind of like pushing them aside to focus on these guys. So how important is it to figure out your target audience?
Very important. I think,
next question.
Yeah. I think just wipe that one away. Yeah. I think, you know, your audience, especially now that we've been, you know, doing this for 3 years or just over 3 years, your audience tells you what they want and what they like. And I think when you go through your social grid, similarly to you, DK, or what content you put out, your audience will respond in a way that tells you what they like or what they want.
Yeah.
And for us, like our brighter colored shoes, our audience want that. So you've got to feed them that. And, you know, we...
is that something you're doing from... Is that information you're taking from comments on socials? Is it surveys? Is it... word of mouth, like how are you getting that feedback?
Yeah, I think it's there's a number of things. You know, there's the sales analytics, so the sales are strong. Our waiting list numbers are strong. The analytics on our socials in terms of likes and comments and engagement are strong. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to, for us, like we know that not everyone is going to wear a bright colored pair of shoes.
Yeah.
But so we're still obviously going to have release our more neutral tones and stuff like that. But our audience is also so strongly focused on those brighter colors right now, and they love that. So you can't neglect what your audience wants. And I think some business owners or small business, a mistake you could make is being in your own head, being like, hey, I want to do this, but your audience isn't responding to that. So you need to identify what it is that your audience is telling you and what they're liking and catering to that.
Yeah.
And then obviously still, you know, still releasing and still putting out products that cater to everyone. I think our demographic, you know, it's easier for a product-based company to go through analytics and go, hey, where's our audience from? What's their age demographic? What does their profile look like?
Yeah.
Whether it's for you, how do you sort of pick up on your audience and those sort of things?
Before I answer that, another question I've got for you on that topic though is like, I don't know if it's like that, if this is similar with like a physical product, but do you kind of have to detach yourself from like what you kind of are emotionally attached to? So say for example, you fucking love this shoe.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is going to do so well, but then the feedback's not great. And then you've then kind of got to go, you just kind of got to accept it and move on and focus on what they want and stop trying to push the same thing.
100%. Like literally sometimes you might think, and I'm sure people listening today who have their own business or their own startup, you think you're producing gold and then your audience tells you otherwise. So, and that's why it's so important to listen and engage and look through your social grid, look through your analytics and constantly analyze that, because your audience does tell you what they like and don't like, and you've got to, you know, you've really got to cater for that.
Yeah, this is what I not struggled with, but what it took too long to figure out early on is because when I first started as a PT, and it was this applied for in person and online, I was just trying to cater to everyone. So like if someone wanted to do a bit of boxing training, we'd do boxing. If they wanted to do a circuit, we'd do circuit. If they wanted to lift weights, we'd lift weights. But the whole time I knew that my best service was offering, you know, resistance and strength training and then high intensity interval training and kind of also obviously teaching people about nutrition and long-term sustainability. So it wasn't until I then kind of just said, all right, from now on, if I get a potential client who wants to do this, but that's not what I want to do for the hour, even though that's potential money that I could make, from now on, I'm going to say no and refer them to someone that I know is good in that field. Same with my content. Like I look at my analytics now and, you know, majority of my target or majority of my audience is female, which obviously has a bit to do with the stuff with Keep It Cleaner. And then obviously a lot of the clientele that I train are female. So the content I put out now is more focused on females. Obviously I still love working with males as well and athletes and that type of stuff that I have a passion for. But if my all of my content is around, say, professional athletes, even though I enjoy working with them, majority of my audience are not professional athletes. So I'm kind of like pushing uphill. Basically. Like I'm kind of going against what is right in front of me. So yeah, now I building out female courses, all that type of stuff and try and target the content towards what the audience actually wants. And that comes with, you know, even looking at the downloads on these podcasts or the engagement on certain social media posts or just doing surveys and stuff like that. You can figure it out pretty quickly. But I reckon initially that was my problem is I saw that I could potentially help a group of people over here or a few groups of people over here. But even though I knew over here was like the main area that I wanted to focus on. So you kind of got to let go of that and then put all your eggs into that basket. Because the thing is, if someone searches up my name, and I just help fucking everyone and a bunch of different people, but they want help with, you know, strength and resistance training in Melbourne. If they search strength and resistance training in Melbourne, then ideally my name's going to be the one that comes up because that's what all of my content is around. So
I agree. And like, you know, even with us, like, you know, our indirect competitors are Nike and Adidas, these huge global brands. And even before we started, you know, but we saw an angle to be the boutique alternative limited run. So, you know, hype. So when people come to our socials or our grid and you go through and you look at it and athleisure, you go through and you see the hype with the imagery. I think you do a great job of it too. Your graphic design work on your EDMs and stuff.
Yeah.
I think a lot of small businesses sometimes neglect the EDM storytelling.
Yeah.
Where I think like graphic design, that's where you can't just have a social presence and a website presence and then not have it via your EDM, because that's where your database receives comms where you can tell your story more and more.
My two most engaging platforms is definitely this and the emails. Yeah. Like emails for me is like probably the most important really, because I mean, in the end of the day, if Instagram crashes tomorrow, if for some reason podcast crashes, like all of a sudden you have no audience.
Exactly. And you have to constantly build what we've spoken about, you know, all the time. Building your email database is so important because that's where, you know, those leads and that audience is your audience. So,
Before we wrap things up, brother, obviously we touched on before the next release. So along with the Fluoro Blue that's coming out, which for those that are watching, you can see it here. If you're not watching it, then just imagine it. It's a sexy looking shoe. It's a blue, sexy looking shoe. What's next for Athleticum? Like, well, you guys got any big plans or what's the next kind of 12 months look like for you guys?
Obviously just much the same in terms of releases, two releases a month, new styles, moving into apparel as well. So you've got some on, obviously. So exciting times with that.
Very nice.
But yeah, heaps of shoe releases, new sneaker releases, more collabs. I know we touched on before the collab with Will.
Yep.
But yeah, collaborations are such an important part of our business, and you know, I can't stress enough, if you've got a product-based business, you should look at doing as many collaborations as you can, because you're reaching a whole new audience, and they turn into your customers too, and you're reaching such a broad audience with collabs. So we've done collabs with a lot of UFC stars who have, you know, millions of followers. So yeah, more collabs, Yeah, more collabs, shoe releases, new sneaker styles, apparel. So heaps going on in the next 12 months.
Unreal. And you were kind enough to offer the listeners, I think we'll run this for the next week. So this will last for a week. For those that are watching, or if you've seen on socials, the blue shoe, or I guess any other shoes that are in stock at the moment on the site, if you use the code DK15, you'll get 15% off your next purchase. So make sure you go and use that. Hopefully you're on the VIP list for the launch tonight if you're listening on the Monday. But Joe, thanks for joining us today, man. That was good.
Thanks for having me. Hope the listeners got some stuff out of it.
100%. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. If you're taking some value from today's episode, please do take a screenshot of this and post it up on your story for me. Tag myself, tag Athletican. I'll also have Joe's social handles in the show notes as well. Again, thanks for joining us, man, and we'll chat again soon.
Thanks, mate.